This is Tech Unmuted, the podcast of modern collaboration, where we tell the stories of how collaboration tools enable businesses to be more efficient and connected, with your hosts, George Shainstein and Santi Cuellar. Welcome to Tech Unmuted.
Welcome to today's episode of Tech Unmuted. Today, we're going to sort of approach this a little differently than we have before. We're going to take a look at some of the things that are going on from a regulatory framework around AI. We're going to throw up a couple of slides today, which is a little different than what we've done before, and take a look at some topic-driven stuff for folks listening along on a podcast, on Spotify, or one of the other platforms. We're going to do this in a way we think will really work pretty well for you and be able to follow along. So, Santi, I don't know if you want to put any other frame around this before we jump in.
I hate regulating, but let's go. I'm all for it. Let's jump. Let's jump into it. But I'm already getting goosebumps. I don't like the topic, but that's just me. Let's dive in.
So with that, I will give a little bit of a sort of frame on this. Santi and I both have a leaning towards less regulation, at least as it's relative to AI and technology development. And you'll see some of the reasons why, and we'll talk about it as we go through this. But at the same time, we're trying to be a little unbiased here. We're going to present pros and cons on this. You know, why should the government regulate? Maybe why shouldn't they? There are two broader guiding principles here. So the first one is around businesses really need some kind of a framework internally to do this, right? They need guidelines and guide rails. And I see those as two different things. So guidelines being something more formal, right? A set of policies and procedures, something else that tells people you can do this or not do that in this kind of situation and provide. Yeah. Yep. And provide a clear stamp for what that is. Guide rails are more of your business philosophy towards, you know, AI and other tools, and how are you going to use them within your organization, and how are you going to get the best business outcome? And that business outcome, we've talked about it on some of the previous episodes. It's in, you'll see it in the Forbes article, which is in an earlier episode. It's really about advancing productivity, and there's really this productivity revolution that's starting to take place around AI. Second piece is really transparency is an imperative as it comes to AI. So
yeah,
what's being developed by AI, how is it being used in your interactions with a business, those kind of things, you need to be clear, right? You can't create a frame of reference where people think they're interacting with a real person, for example, when they're not, right?
That's correct.
It doesn't create a fair environment for that person, and it misleads from an expectation standpoint. But Santi, I'll give you a second to chime in here as well before we jump into the couple of slides that we have.
Well, I mean, I'm in agreement so far. We're in the direction that we're headed with this conversation, and I do like your definition of guidelines versus guide rails. One of the things that I took away from when we were in Vegas at the Microsoft conference was this idea of, it's not a new thing, it's just now it's become more prevalent, which is the idea of responsible AI, right? And to your point, you know, this is the framework. And by the way, there's no universal framework because folks tend to do things slightly differently, right? But it covers the areas that you're touching on here, things like not being biased, things like being factual and being truthful in its response, not discriminating, and being secured as well, because you know the data is only as good as its integrity, and so when you lose that integrity, the AI loses integrity. So I think we're heading the right track here, but so far I like this, especially like the second one. So I'd like to see what you got here for the show and tell today.
And we had talked a little bit about this episode of maybe even just going to the website and going to Microsoft's website and looking at that framework. It sits under Azure. We'll drop it in the show notes. You can certainly go take a look at it.
Sure.
Yeah. It wasn't as sort of broader framed as I think this discussion is, which we're working on topics that are both business oriented and government oriented, or at least, you know, country oriented, as you'll see in the slides as we go through it. But we're going to go through three pros and three cons. We're starting with the con. And then we're going to flip to the pros of, and this is really around the framework of, should there be regulations or should there not be regulations? And again, you know, our personal belief, and Santi and I talk about this all the time, is we'd prefer to start with a business framework and a set of business rules or business engagement rules that are collectively agreed to. Although there are some things in here, and we'll flag them, where it really does need some type of government regulation around certain elements of this to ensure sort of safety and efficacy and those kind of things. But I'll hit on both these bullets first. So this first con is around stifling innovation. And there's two issues here, right? You overregulate, or create a framework that's challenging, right? You will discourage people from investing. You will not have entrepreneurial endeavors either as their own company or with inside organizations. And you will, it's very likely that you will impact this pace at which this moves. And again, Santi and I have mentioned this a little bit on some of the previous podcasts, but we've been very aggressive in using tools internally, from bot development to workflows that are AI enabled, to any other number of new tools that were out there. And if those things weren't available, we obviously wouldn't use them, right? They wouldn't be available to us or anybody else.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, listen, let's be honest. The last 6, 7, 8 months of AI news and the evolution of AI, how fast it has evolved in just the last few months, it's because it's not regulated. Let's be honest. That's exactly why it has happened so fast in the past several months. And so to your point, once you regulate it too much and handcuff some of these ideas, then it just becomes a burden. So I agree.
And the flip side again is that we're in at the really early stages of productivity revolution. This is something, you know, most of us in our lifetime haven't really seen. Computers came in, right? And they did make a dramatic impact on the workplace. Sure. But this is happening so much more rapidly. The impact is going to be quicker and the impact is going to be bigger. So we'll take a look at con number two. So international competitiveness.
Yeah, right? This is a good
one. Again, we're not competing. We are, you know, from our own business standpoint, we're competing against other companies and countries and other organizations, or connections between countries, are competing against other countries, right? And this creates a lot of risk, right? If you overregulate in one area and you're competing against another country or set of countries who are less regulated, they will advance faster, right? Will be a big issue.
For sure. Listen, it's historically proven. Without mentioning countries, we are always, right, in a competitive nature with countries that, especially in technology, we're always racing, right, to be the first ones out with that latest and greatest shiny object. And we know for a fact that some other countries have beat us to the punch, and it's happened. Why? Well, because we overregulate. They don't have that. They don't have that kind of burden. And so this is a big one, in my opinion. And I don't think when folks who come up with these regulations, I don't think they take this into account, or at least they don't take it serious. But in the world stage, right, you will lose first place from a technology evolution standpoint and because of overregulation.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And the bullet at the bottom is more around, you know, what is the outcome of overregulating, right? And if I've got the ability to do something in another region or another country and it's favorable to my business, I'm going to go do that, right? We saw manufacturing for years move overseas for a number of It's cost being one of them, regulatory being other.
That's correct.
But you've got to be aware of the consequences that potentially come with the regulation. And the final piece, it's, you know, it depends on the application of the regulations or the laws, but
yeah.
It's around bias and unfairness. And specifically around that, are certain types of organizations targeted for some reason? Are they not connected or involved enough in the development of the regulation that they lose out? Or is there some other reason that the regulation unfairly impacts them? And this can have a dramatic effect as well, right? It could result in the same kind of migration. Like, I will go to another country to do what I do because—
Sure. You know, and I never thought of this in this frame of mind. I will tell you that I have a different perspective, and that is, what if the people who are writing the regulation, be it whatever, for political reasons, for personal interests, what if the people who are writing the regulation inject bias of some sort or some kind of unfairness themselves? And so that's another thing. It's like you're in the hands of people who are regulating who really don't understand the technology to begin with, let's be honest. So, okay, this is good. All right.
Yep. So we're going to take a look at a couple of the pros, right?
Reasons why
we would potentially want to consider regulation, right? First and foremost, national security and defense. So
I'm all in.
Yeah. You get some level of unregulated risk that happens, right?
Yep.
If this is completely out in the wild. It could be malicious use, it could be cyber attacks, it could be different types of autonomous weapons. This isn't necessarily a weapon that's shot into the air. It could be an electronic weapon that is constantly out there attacking and doing other things, as well as surveillance that could happen that would infringe on people in other ways, right?
And that's from a big one. That's a big deal. Yeah. This is what the government should be doing. Like, this is when we talk about regulation, this should be like front of mind, right? Is this this aspect here, and I think that's appropriate. You have no pushback from me on this one.
And the other, there's another element that we didn't know where to put it in the three pros that we had, but it's around accountability. If there is a negative outcome that comes from the development of AI-enabled tools, who's accountable, right? Who's responsible? How is that regulated? Is there a medical tool built on AI that prescribes medicine and it's the wrong medicine? Does it indicate that there's some type of medical issue that doesn't actually exist? Does it take you down a path that's the wrong path? Even things like, to a great extent in finance, there are a lot of regulations around how you give investment advice.
Sure.
There are licensing requirements and all kinds of other things around that. It's probably not feasible in today's world that is going to be a completely AI-based kind of environment unless there's an ability to get people to release all rights to a negative outcome, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think we necessarily want that. So there are good reasons. Clearly,
Saul
Sanchez's reaction, the national security and defense piece, clearly a big risk. Right?
From the guy who doesn't like regulation, I'm okay with this one.
So the second one is around ethical concerns. And some of this tails off of that second bullet.
Oh, sure.
And there's a longer list here. So I'll hit on them one by one and we can come back to them. But that piece I already hit on, which is operational safety and not causing harm to individuals. So there needs to be, and again, maybe it's not guidelines/regulations, maybe it's guide rails into the way things are used and what's an acceptable use. Are the algorithms fair, transparent, and unbiased? So think of this bias more in the way of an individual bias. Does it inadvertently or deliberately treat one group of people different than another group of people? Again, back to that same point, who's accountable when something goes wrong, right? When something is off the rails and there's a bad outcome, how do you deal with that bad outcome? Fourth bullet that we've got here, right? What are the penalties? So yeah. Without regulation, there are no penalties for bad actors, and bad actors can do anything they want. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen, I use the stop sign analogy, right? We got a stop sign. That's a regulation. It's a law. Yep. You have folks, the majority of the people are going to do what? They're going to stop, right? They're absolutely going to stop. You're going to have a small subset of people who may roll through it, right? Not quite follow it to the letter of the law. Yep. They roll through it. But then we know there's going to be folks who will recklessly just go right through, blow through a stop sign, not with no regard for anybody else's safety and even their own. And that's an even smaller group, thank goodness. And so that's my argument. My argument is you can have all these stop signs in the form of regulation all you want. It's not going to stop the bad actor. But yeah, you're right. When you're able to catch the bad actor, what do you charge him with unless you have some kind of a statute? And so
yep.
I get it. So long as you know it's clear, it's not going to stop it. Right? I mean, look at the internet today. You know, you have the dark web. Who stops that? It's impossible to stop it, right?
Yeah. And we've already heard stories of people using AI voice generators to.
Oh yes, you know, deep fakes.
Grandmom gets a call, and it's
granddaughter
Sally, and she's in distress, and it sounds just like Sally because it's an AI version of Sally.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Not necessarily going to stop any of that. But if there's some accountability and some penalties in place, at least you have a way to go back and attempt to take action, right?
Sure.
And the final piece in here is, this is broader, right? And we've seen a lot of this regulation start in the EU. We've seen elements of it in Canada, some loose elements of it in the US, and clearly in California has been more in the forefront of some of this, but it's around data collection, storage, and usage, and what your individual rights, and how were these tools built in the same in the first place? They ingested data, right? They interacted with the world effectively. Everything that was available on the internet, other data sources, etc.
Yep.
They do not house that data. They don't need the tools. At least ChatGPT, as an example, doesn't house the previous thing it said to someone in a broader way that everyone has access to it, or the tool itself can even go back and look at what it had previously said, right, in any kind of real way. So there's got to be some rules around that, right? I want some control of my personal
data. I agree.
You know, and there was a recent one, I saw the story pop up a couple of times. There was a university where, at least the way the story was written, a professor went and took all the final assignments from several of his classes, went to ChatGPT itself,
right,
and put them one by one into ChatGPT and asked ChatGPT if it wrote it. Now,
really?
The tool itself has no way to know what it wrote in that way. It can't look back on itself. It doesn't know who that would have been.
Interesting.
Even their verbatim content. And apparently told, you know, most of the class that they'd failed the class, right? So there's a big debate around what really happened here. But there's a level of where was that data used? What was it used for, right?
Okay.
And how, what is that access? Should there be access to what ChatGPT has previously said, right? Should there be an audit trail? Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
An audit trail, right?
I think it's fine the way it is.
So let's take a look. We've got probe number three for regulation, which is around economic impact and job displacement. I'll hit on each of these bullets. I might take these one by one and debate them a little bit, because I think we put these in to try to be thoughtful around the way we're interacting around them, but we don't necessarily believe some of this. So the potential to significantly impact the job market and the economy. So I think the perspective in the market today is, where's this negative outcome going to be? Because I know there's going to be one, and I'm going to lose my job, or it's going to impact my job.
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, we've had these discussions over and over again. We see this as a productivity hack. We see this as a way that there's really this productivity revolution that is already taking place.
Correct. Absolutely.
And it's about how do you use the tools, right? Mm-hmm. Take advantage of the tools you have. We talk frequently about what's in Microsoft 365 and the new things that literally appear just about every day, right? Yeah.
And we've adapted. We've adapted. We ourselves have adapted. We're not out of a job. No, we identified the use. We identified its value, and we've kind of repositioned ourselves to leverage it as best we can. And I think that the key here is, and we've always said it, and we'll continue to say it: become the master of the prompt. If you can become the master of the prompt, then you won't be thinking about these things, because it's not going to take your job. You're going to use it to make your job even better and more valuable is what you're going to do. But yeah, that's good. I get the point. I get the fear that's out there. It's the fear of the unknown is what I think it really is.
And it's happened throughout time, right? So there have been revolutions. The computer, which was in our lifetime, right? The Industrial Revolution, which obviously wasn't. But those things all played out. And overall, economic activity increased. And there was, you know, you can debate whether there was winners and losers within that. But I will say, you know, there will be winners and losers in this. There will be those people and those businesses and those countries that take the most advantage of this, of AI, right?
Look, we have Vietnam veterans on smartphones, on social media. I mean, come on, it's the greatest thing ever. And they would never have envisioned that when they were out fighting a war. And now here they're back home and they have this entire world unlocked, where they can connect with people from all over and stay in touch with friends and family. And their phone tells them what to do. I mean, this is just the next revolution. And every time there is one, there is uncertainty. And I think this is what we're seeing.
For sure. And I'm going to skip the second bullet. We already sort of hit that on increased productivity, but fourth bullet is around third bullet is around regulation can help maintain fair competition and prevent monopolistic practices. So there's a lot to unpack here, right? Yeah. Who has access to it, right? OpenAI was originally conceived, I think, as a nonprofit and some type of open source access. It is not open source today. It is loosely open access. There's APIs available. You can build tools off the back of it. But you do have one single organization controlling what's at the crux of a lot of the AI development in the market today.
Right.
There's a risk there, right? Completely unregulated, that could go in multiple different directions. Some of them that have a positive impact and some which have a negative, right? Elon Musk said the other day something to the effect of, you know, there's a lot of outcomes here. A lot of them are positive. And then there's, you know, this one that it's catastrophic and it ends the world. You know, basically is what he said.
Yeah.
I don't believe that, right?
Yeah, I'm not buying that either.
I think there's more to happen from a positive standpoint. And then the final thing on here is around intellectual property and data ownership, right? And this goes back to a point we made a little earlier of where did the data come from in the first place? What is the eventual use of the outputs? There are already some regulations in place around being able to patent or copyright things that were fully developed by some type of autonomous tool, right?
So there's something in place already that prevents you from.
It's my understanding.
Interesting.
Not a reviewer of regulatory material.
Sure.
I saw an article the other day that indicated that. Yes.
Yeah. Makes sense
that there's a push right towards more detailed guidelines.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, should you? I don't know how to debate this, right? Should you be able to create an image with AI and copyright it? It to me, I would say you should be able to, right? It was you as the operator
prompt,
of the AI tool,
the prompt.
And the prompt you use to get to the outcome, right?
Absolutely, it's your unique prompt. If I copied your prompt and use your prompt, I'm copying your input and that should not be allowed. But if I come up with my own prompt, with my own details, with my own from scratch, my own concept and idea, and I inject this into the AI and get an output, that's my idea. I struggle with that one. Let's see where the chips fall, but I can see where this could be problematic, I think. We'll see.
And let's hit So let's look at one final piece here. There was a meeting in Washington a couple of days ago as we're taping this. So it was on May 15th. There was a series of hearings that took place in DC. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about what they were, but Sam Altman was there, who's the CEO of OpenAI.
Right, right.
The feedback that I saw was pretty good, that this wasn't your typical, you know, tech CEO comes into Washington and sits around and gets a lot of questions about things that they did wrong. This was more about the representatives who were involved in those meetings really understanding what the tools can do. But I thought there were two interesting things. It was actually pulled that out of a CNBC article, and we'll link that as well in the show notes. But the first one that Sam said was AI is a tool and not a creature. So again, yeah, I like reinforcing that point we've been making. And the second part of that was this is something that is going to assist human beings, not replace human beings, right? So you need to find your place, right? You need to understand how to use these tools. You need to understand how they're going to impact productivity, those kind of things. And the one of his other statements was, it will do tasks and not jobs.
Right.
So
yeah.
Is it, now I could debate that one a little bit. Could you have an AI bot who is a customer service rep who in many instances from start to finish could handle a customer service interaction either in chat or in a live video or on a phone? You probably can.
Right? They do today. But at the end of the day, when it has to be escalated, who's it escalating to? It's got to escalate to a human being. So, I mean, again, the mundane task of asking a customer, how can I help you? And the FAQ, the frequently asked questions, and point them to the answer that 90% of people who call ask, that's great application for AI. But when it's not inside that knowledge base and AI can't find the answer, who's escalating? It's going to escalate to a human being. By the way, I love the first quote, the AI is a tool and not a creature. I think I want to make a t-shirt out of that, because it is absolutely, sometimes we speak about this like it's a creature, you know? So I think it's brilliant in the statement that he made. But yeah, I mean, I look at the tolls. Remember, I'm old enough, you're old enough to remember when there were people at the toll plaza. Remember that? They would take your money and give your change. And by the way, if you didn't have money, they would write you like an IOU type thing. You know, you have to kind of send it in. Then they came out with these RFID tags. And so they cut the tolls in half. So now you had speed lanes and then half the workers. Well, now they have plate readers. So you don't even need the RFID. So therefore you don't need a toll plaza worker. Now you just go through tolls with or without it. And so I understand that part, but I think AI is really playing a major role in the information workers' productivity. That's where the majority of the impact is occurring. And if you're an information worker or you're in management, okay, and AI is going to be your best friend to make your role more effective. I can speak from experience, because that's what I've been experiencing for the past 6 months as we've done a deep dive into AI ourselves. So that's where I kind of, I get it. The toll workers, right? They would make a different argument, but this is not the application today that we're referring to, right? So I think it's not. I struggle with the concept still, right?
And it's about velocity, right? So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
even the discussion we had earlier today, we look at Salesforce all the time to see what different data, right?
Right, sure.
We run marketing campaigns, we see opportunities in pipeline, we look at the cascade of what happens within Salesforce. Not everyone on the team has access. For me individually, I'm in there a lot, but you know, once or twice a day, I have to log back in. I have to re-authenticate to get back in. I've closed a browser. I've got to get back in, whatever it is. And what we started to look at today was, is there a way to present that data in Microsoft Teams, the tool that we are in constantly, the tool that we are recording this podcast in, right? Sure. the ability to, at the click of a button, get to those same dashboards mm-hmm. in Teams, it's going to, you know, from an iterative standpoint, saves me 5 to 10 minutes a day. What do I do with those 5 to 10 minutes? What exactly. else can I layer in there? Workday, for example, we separately log into Workday for mm-hmm. Approvals or submissions around paid time off or financial approvals or whatever else that flows through the system. Mm-hmm. The ability to get a notification in Teams that that's there to be approved, and then the ability to actually take action without a separate login within Teams. Wow, there's another 5 or 10 minutes
there, right? 100%.
So that's 10 to 20 minutes. So how long is it going to take in those kind of productivity hacks to free up an hour a day? That's 5 hours a week. What can I do with 5 hours a week? It's substantial, yeah. right?
It is substantial. Okay.
But with that, we're at the end of the slides today. I hope this was a engaging discussion between Santé and I for folks to listen to.
We'd love to hear your comments. Yeah, it's definitely a different angle, right? It's different than what we've done in the past, but it's something that we have to talk about it because it's unavoidable, right? It's going to happen. I went in it at first thinking, oh boy, we're going to talk regulation. I ended up saying, you know what? Some of these things do make sense. I can buy into some of this stuff. We are at the end of this presentation. Thanks, George, for bringing up the show and tell. I thought it was very well thought out. Until next time, folks, remember to stay connected.
Visit fusionconnect.com/techunmuted for show notes and more episodes. Thanks for listening.